I'd like to call the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Division to order. We do have a quorum, so I'd entertain a motion to move the minutes. Representative Hobart moves the minutes of March 5th. Any discussions or corrections? Not all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
The motion, no, or contrary, no, or aye. The motion prevails. Minutes are adopted. This evening, we're going to hear the major funding bills, and all of the bills will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus transportation finance bill. We do have the room till 8 o'clock. We anticipate we'll get covering in all of those. And what we'll do, we'll hear the bills prior to taking any testimony, because I think basically Representative Hobart and Representative Earhart's and the bills that we have are fairly similar, so we'll wait till after the presentation of the bills. Representative Hobart, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm hoping that you'll allow me to phone a friend for my testimony. Mr. McFarland would like to participate in the testimony on the governor's bill. Is that all right?
That's fine.
All right. I'd hate for him to have to wait till the end of the testimony, because I might need him sooner than that.
We should move the bill, I presume.
I would be happy to move House File 799 for consideration by the committee.
Representative Hobart moved House File 799. Thank you. Representative Earhart.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering if you consider Mr. McFarland qualified to talk about this bill. I've only heard him about 10 times in the last 3 months. I'm kidding you.
Quite well taken, Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart. And as Representative Earhart said, these issues have been discussed. We've had department overviews and presentation of their budgets for the committee. So I'm going to be very brief in this presentation, highlight some of the unique features of the governor's transportation package, and then happy to stand for any questions. The bill is the transportation and finance bill of the governor's, and as you know, he takes $100 million of the one-time money, uses $5 million of it for a study of a mileage tax. There's $1.7 billion in bonding, which Mr. McFarland will talk about a little bit in a few minutes about the cash flow, the debt service for that part of the proposal. In addition, there's some characteristics that I did receive a notice from Chair Lencheski that if this bill were to move, it would need to go to the tax committee, and that it exempts sales tax for purchases for highway purposes and also for commuter rail, which have sales tax implications. And I'm assuming that whatever bill gets out of here will probably have other tax implications as well, and will be going to her committee, but I wanted to make that point. As well. This bill also provides for the phase-in of the motor vehicle sales tax that was approved by the voters last November, which has a phase-in of 60% for roads, 40% for transit, 38 metro, 2 rural in the transit division. In addition, there are some fees that are in the bill, that fee on lease the automobiles, and a raising of the fee for certificate of titles, permit fees for motorized bicycles, and identification cards for seniors. It also puts in a reinstatement fee of $20 for people whose license was suspended for theft of gasoline. And I think in addition, there's additional money for the state patrol for additional troopers. And what I would say relative to that, should this committee determine that there should be additional money for state troopers, I think we should look at some additional language in the bill that would make sure that we actually got additional troopers and not more gas and more vehicles. Historically, we have provided additional money for more state troopers, and we haven't seen that come to fruition. So if the chair is going to support that measure in his bill, I'm hopeful that we can put some additional language to make sure we actually get the troopers out of the expenditure. I think those are the highlights. I think what I'll do is let Mr. McFarland discuss the bonding program and the cash flow for the debt service, and then I'll have a few words in conclusion as well.
Thank you, Representative Holbert. Welcome to the committee, Mr. McFarland.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Bob McFarland, Assistant to the Commissioner at MnDOT. Thanks to Representative Holbert for carrying the governor's package. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'll just address some of the main points of the governor's transportation financing package that is incorporated into this budget bill. As Representative Holbert mentioned, the governor is proposing a $1.7 billion 10-year bonding package in this bill. And you have, as part of a packet that MnDOT provided each member, I'd like to point to the sheet that is debt service schedule for 1.7, and it's got the spreadsheet on it. The key point about the governor's bonding package is that this bonding package is serviced, the debt is serviced entirely by the new revenues that come to the Trunk Highway Fund from the new constitutionally dedicated portion of the motor vehicle sales tax revenues that were approved by the voters in fall. No other revenues to the Trunk Highway Fund are necessary to finance this package. In fact, this package does not take all of those revenues. Over a 30-year period of this package, principal and interest on the governor's package, and I'm going to point to the very bottom line where it says totals to try to explain the sheet. In the 30 years or 31 years of 2008 to 2038, the new revenues to the Trunk Highway Fund from the new constitutional dedication of MVES will total $4.289 billion, and this number also incorporates the governor's proposal to include sales tax on leased vehicles as an MVEST revenue. The debt service and principal interest in debt service on the governor's plan over that period will use $2.547 billion of that amount, leaving over those years $1.742 billion all the way there to the right column of those revenues available for other purposes within the Trunk Highway Fund. So those are the bottom line figures. I'll explain the green and red figures in the second to the last column. Those figures represent the difference in an individual year between the amount of new money to the Trunk Highway Fund from the estimated MVES transfer and debt service in that year. So, for example, in the year 2008, at the very top, motor vehicle sales tax transfer is going to provide $28.5 million to the Trunk Highway Fund. In that year, there will be $1.26 million in debt service to begin the governor's plan, leaving $27.31 of motor vehicle sales tax revenues, or new revenues to the Trunk Highway Fund that are not necessary for debt service. What you'll notice there is a surplus of new MVES revenues in the first 9 years of the governor's plan that total $294 million. For the next 5 years, under these assumptions, there will be less new MVES to the Trunk Highway Fund than debt service in those years. That totals $54 million. Through management of the flow of funds in those first years, by setting aside a portion of the $294 million in MVES to the Trunk Highway Fund, we will be able to cover the small annual deficits in those 5 years. And then in the years, the subsequent years, through the remainder of the plan, every single year, new MVES revenues to the Trunk Highway Fund cover the debt service on the governor's plan. So it just takes a little bit of fiscal management, a little bit of fiscal awareness to make this plan pay for itself from a new stream of revenues, which is, I know in the years that we've had this discussion about debt service and trunk highway debt, that's been a concern of the legislature. What the governor's plan does is propose a bonding package and a dedicated source of revenue to pay the debt service. A new dedicated source of revenue to pay the debt service. So that's the nature of the governor's bonding plan. I did want to point out, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, but also in the governor's package, he has proposed that the sales tax on leased vehicles be a dedicated transportation revenue stream and treated in the exact same fashion as the motor vehicle sales tax will be treated per the constitutional amendment that was passed in November. It's simply taking that revenue and adding it to the MVEST pot to be dedicated in the fashion the legislature chooses to distribute those funds. That proposal in the governor's plan will add about $450 million of new transportation revenue over the next 10 years. It's about a $450 million item. And Mr. Chairman, I'd also like to mention, to reiterate what Representative Holbrook said, the governor is also proposing a $100 million one-time general fund transfer to the Trunk Highway Fund. And that transfer is for two main purposes. Three. The $5 million for the pilot program on mileage-based taxation that the governor has initiated and MnDOT is beginning to put together. The remaining $95 million is intended to, one, make sure that the Triangle project, known as the Devil's Triangle in the northwest suburbs, goes forward under construction this construction season. That project has been temporarily deferred so we can move the Crosstown project forward as quickly as possible this winter and spring. And by approving this proposal from the governor, the Devil's Triangle project will get back on schedule. Secondly, that money would be used to keep other projects throughout the state, in greater Minnesota and some in the metro area, on schedule as they are currently scheduled over the next couple of construction seasons, in the face of some less than anticipated gas tax and tab fee revenues that came forward in the November forecast of 2006. So we want to just make sure that we don't lose time on any projects due to reduced revenues from those two revenue streams. So, Mr. Chairman, with that, I will stand for questions on the governor's plan, on the bonding plan, or any other part of it.
Members, we will take questions for the witness here. We're going to have testifiers after, as I indicated, after we have presentation of the three bills. But if there are specific questions of Mr. McFarland, we should perhaps ask him now. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have different figures that were prepared by our crack fiscal analyst squad. And they don't, that red, it spreads itself over a number of more years. The numbers were supposed to be from the Transportation Department, but I don't want to get into the nitpicking of
it. Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, the chart that is before you, the numbers on this chart come from the Department of Finance, and they have been reconciled with the February forecast that was just released last week. So the... if I can, Mr. Chairman, the estimate of revenues to the Trunk Highway Fund in the second column in from the left, those represent Department of Finance figures or estimates for MVEST revenue and estimates for sales tax on leased vehicle revenue through 2008, the actual estimates. And then we have applied a very conservative 2% growth rate to those figures. The debt service on the governor's plan come from the Department of Finance, and they did a debt service model for the governor's plan and updated that model for the February forecast. So, and then the rest of it is simply math, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Earhart.
Do I understand that you already have included in here the monies on the leased vehicles?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Well, no wonder.
So, Mr. Chairman, this is a chart that represents the governor's proposal, and the governor is proposing sales tax on leased vehicles.
Mr. Chairman, there are a lot of other folks that want to get their hands on that money, so I don't think you should count that in your bottom line here at the moment. But you did, so fine.
Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, this chart represents the proposal in this bill. We all know that what comes out of this committee is going to be a compilation of a number of elements from a bunch of different bills. It always looks different, but this piece of paper reflects the numbers in the governor's proposal.
And we'll be reconciling those with the other, taking a look at all three of funding. Any other question? Not. Thank you, Mr. McFarland.
Mr. Chair, I think Representative Hausman had a question.
Oh, Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So even with that, you're saying there are 5 years in the red, and where would that money be coming from during those 5 years?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, if as I mentioned, in the years prior to those red years, there is essentially a surplus of $294 million of new MVEST revenues. That's the sum total of those nine green years. What in the previous governor's packages, it was always also part of the plan that some money would be banked from those surpluses to cover those few years where there are red numbers. So what you would do is you would manage the governor's bonding program. MnDOT would manage it in such a fashion as there would be new MVEST dollars saved over the early years to pay those small deficits in those 5 years. So if you save $56 million in the first 9 years and set them aside anticipating those shortages, you would have those dollars available.
So, Mr. Chair, in other words, by 2021, there would be a net of $240 million that would not be needed for debt service over that period of time. So you just have a cash flow issue and put some in the bank for those red years, if you will, rather than appropriating them to current year spending.
You have a further question, Representative Hausman?
Well, maybe somebody asked this. Does a candidate project mean it's going to be done or it might be done?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, thank you for asking a question. I neglected to go through that. I appreciate that. The other thing in your packet is you have both a map and a list of projects, candidate projects, that would be accelerated under the governor's plan. They are anticipated to, these would be the projects. Now, this list is a little bit different for those of you who were here last session. This list is a little bit different in a structure than the list you saw in the 2006 session. In this fashion, the governor's plan is $1.7 billion. This list of projects represents about $1.3 billion in expenditures for projects. The other $400 million in the governor's plan is simply assumed to be available for cost increases, inflation, unexpected expenditures, and the like. We are not indicating in this particular list that there are more projects to come, which was the case last year. So these are the projects. They come directly from our district's priority lists throughout the state. They were nominated for as bond eligible and bond worthy and projects that could be accelerated by our district offices through their priority setting process and coming from their process through their ATPs. Also a difference, if you take a look at the very last page, you'll see, it's not, I apologize for the copies, but you'll see a list that's kind of in dark. The $1.3 billion of projects represented here represent $650 million targeted towards Greater Minnesota projects, and $650 million targeted to metropolitan area projects. The $650 million in greater Minnesota spending, roughly, is indicated, is completely used by the projects in greater Minnesota. For the metropolitan area, there are two projects that are specifically listed, the interchange at 494 and 169, and the 610 extension up in the Northwest Metro. Those two projects total $380 million. The remaining $270 million of metro project spending is not set for specific projects, but is available for discussion with the Transportation Advisory Board and the Metropolitan Council for prioritization. And we suggest that this list in the dark area is the likely list that the Metropolitan Council, TAB, and MnDOT will discuss in that prioritization process. When the governor issued his list last year under his previous proposal, the Transportation Advisory Board expressed to MnDOT a desire to have a little bit more input in the prioritization of the bonding dollars available for the metro. So this approach helps try to answer that request. So all of these projects could not be built with $270 million, but we want to engage the discussion with TAB about which one should move forward.
Further questions? Representative Hur.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're getting very close to earmarking, but that was done in the 2003 governor's plan right after the bonding and the borrowing took place. What happened, however, if you remember correctly, that at least two of those projects were delayed for one of them, delayed for a year, I think. And the 169 and 494 project, both of which were spoken for by the bonding that was in the borrowing that was proposed in 2003. The 169 and 494 project has been delayed off into the night somewhere. It hasn't been done. Now we're suggesting again that we're going to say this project or that project is going to be done because we're going to do some more bonding. And as a matter of fact, we're going through the same process at a much reduced borrowing over 205 and the 206 plans, but not as much as the 203 borrowing scheme.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, there's a difference between this plan and the 2003 plan, is that we have allowed a cushion of about $400 million in the bonding authorization to deal with unexpected costs or project problems that we deal with in our program at all times, whether it's bonding dollars or whether it's regular cash dollars. We're always, we're always dealing with, trying real hard to keep our projects on schedule that are under cost pressures or under pressures of environmental review or under, pressures of local consent. Any number of factors can defer projects. However, the 2003 plan has delivered great successes. The Unweave the Weave project is under construction. The only project on that list that we were unable to build financially was the 169-494 interchange. All other projects, there was an out-state project that changed in scope. It was a bridge up in Monticello that we changed the plans for that didn't go forward, but it wasn't due to financial reasons. But all other projects of that plan have either been completed or are under construction.
Any further questions? Not. Thank you, Mr. McFarland.
Thank you, Mr.
And again, for the committee members, we'll have testifiers for or against after we hear all three bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee, for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Next. next bill up is House File 23, Representative Earhart.
Barlin was here helping represent Holberg, and I threw my condolences and assistance. If there's anybody can help me up there?
Representative Earhart, I presume these are helping you testify in your bill, not as we're going to have people coming up later
okay.
in support or against it. Would you care to move your bill?
Mr. Chairman and members, I would move House File 23 for discussion and possible inclusion in the omnibus transportation bill.
Thank you, Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, I have some handouts, and if I can have pages that would be available. You can start with anywhere you want to go. I didn't get them up to that. So, whatever you
but
want.
Do they all need to go?
Yeah.
Any order?
Well, this is first, that one. The first handout that you're going to get your hands on will explain the enormous needs that the state has for the state and local units of government have for transit and transportation, roads and transit monies. And some of you have seen this before, I'm sure. We were working off of $24 billion shortfall. We're over the next 30 years. Now we're cranked this down to the latest figures in the planning period 2008 to 2014. This bill and the next one will take a much bigger bite out of the problem that exists in the funding over what the governor has offered. And it will be, a lot of it will be on a pay-as-you-go basis. Article 1 of House File 23 I'm going to tell you that the present situation on the wheelage tax is that the seven-county metro area has now the ability to raise a $5 wheelage fee per year. And in turn, they have to offset their transportation levies with whatever money they raise from the wheelage fee. Article 1 in House File 23 would authorize all 87 counties to levy a wheelage tax of up to $20 per vehicle with proceeds departed from the county road and bridge fund. One subsection, 5, removes the language requiring a reduction in the amount of property tax levied by the county. And so that would go away, and they could deposit the whole thing in the road and bridge fund without interfering with the their property tax transportation monies. The rough estimate for the increased revenue from the wheelage tax is about $30 million a year, and that would be about $60 million a biennium. Article 2 is the vehicle registration tax license tab fee. That would be restructured. The governor, with the Porsche, did not like the fact that he was paying high motor vehicle registration taxes. So he, in a move one year, reduced the vehicle registration tax, and it left a hole in the fund. This would restore the registration tax to the depreciation schedule that was in effect before he made his move. And this would be an estimated increase of about $72 million per biennium. Article 3, what's in statute, the AmVest sales tax dollars, which in the constitutional amendment just passed were at least 40% for transit, not more than 60% for highways. This provides a 60% of the revenue when this is fully phased in, and in between be deposited in the highway user tax distribution fund, the road fund. And it also provides that 40% of the revenue be deposited in a transit fund with 35% deposited in the Metropolitan Area Transit account and 5% deposited in the Greater Minnesota Transit account. Now, there have been various figures that have been bandied about by that, and in that respect of where the 40%, how it should be split between Metro and Greater Minnesota. And maybe that's yet to be decided. The estimated revenue increase from this would be $153 million biennium. Article 4 is the fuel tax. And you have a handout in your packet that says something to the effect that Minnesota is about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, about 13, whatever that is from the other half. They're 40th in the amount of gas tax. Minnesota has not raised its gas tax in 18 years. All but five of the other states in the past 18 years have raised their gas tax. Also, this Article 4 would index the fuel tax to the rate of consumer price index. As you know, both Minnesota and Wisconsin had a 20-cent fuel tax 19 years ago now. And Wisconsin indexed their fuel tax, gasoline tax. Today, theirs is about 32 cents. That means that, to me anyway, that our fuel tax is not anywhere near buying the same amount of goods that it was when it was initiated. It would take 12 cents to bring it to the level that the index tax in Wisconsin now produces. So 10 cents is, this one says 10 cents. Yes.
Excuse me.
Are we going to take questions now? Fine.
You want them when you go? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, I just saw something today said Wisconsin tossed out the indexing thing. Is that a correct understanding? How many states are doing that now, and is Wisconsin still doing it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Magnus, they did. But that doesn't do anything to what I'm suggesting, is that if we had done it, we could have tossed ours out now as well and had a 32-cent gas tax.
Representative Earhart, I wonder if they... Representative Magnus, too, I believe they just temporarily suspended. I don't believe they threw it out.
Well,
okay.
Thank you. The estimated revenues biennial is $640 million biennium, as I said. Article 5 is a CASA distribution. Counties have agreed that there should be a new way of distributing for new money only the revenues that would come in from the various sources. And so anything in excess of the 20 cents per gallon gas tax or changes in the motor vehicle registration tax or the motor vehicle sales tax in excess of the 2007 revenue amount would be on a formula based 60% on money needs and 40% on vehicle registration in the counties. This is tossed around 2 years ago when the counties, after spending all summer talking about it, decided that this would be okay with him. Article 6 dedicates the tax on motor vehicle that are leased to transportation under the same distribution as the revenue from the sale of new or used motor vehicles over a 5-year period of time. The estimated revenue from that section would be $67 million a biennium. Article 7 is capital investment. If you look on the top of your chart, the colored chart, it shows some of the needs other than the trunk highway system. And it would dedicate Midwest Regional Rail Initiative at $10 million. This is $115 million. Local Bridge Program, $50 million. Local Road Improvement Program, $50 million. Ports Assistance, $2 million. Greater Minnesota Transit, $10.5 million. The I-35 LRT Study, $2 million. I know that Representative Holberg has been holding her breath so she can get light rail down to Lakeview, so we put that in there for her.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to know where Lakeview is.
Central Corridor, $40 million, and Union Depot, $12 million. Article 8 is the local sales tax. It authorizes the 7 counties in the Twin City metro area to impose a half-cent sales tax with the proceeds distributed by a resolution of Joint Powers Board comprised of the 7 counties. The resolution must provide 50% of the revenue be distributed to MnDOT, the Metropolitan Council, and the counties that operate transit services, implementation of the Metropolitan Council's transit plan, and 50% to MnDOT and the counties for highway and road construction and maintenance. And that's going to be not laid on them, but if they join together and vote, the county boards vote and join in a Joint Powers Board. Do we have a train in the area? That means that this is permissive on the part of the 7 counties in the metro area. Outside of the 7 county metro area, a county or more than one county, again, acting under a joint powers agreement, may impose a sales tax of 0.5% with the proceeds dedicated to payment of specific transportation projects in their counties. And it also requires a report describing the use of the revenue to the House and Senate Transportation Committee. And this is estimated, the biennial, $343 million. Road user fee task force is Article 9. This is modeled after the Oregon legislation, which at the present, I think the federal government is helping out with deciding whether or not there's a possibility of some other form of taxing mechanism to maintain the roads. In this case, they are looking at a mileage test in Oregon on a pilot project. We would do the same, and hopefully the commissioner would recommend something by January 2008, if a pilot program made any sense or not, and by January 15, 2009, the final report on this would be due to the House and Senate Transportation Committees. Article 10 appropriates the Metropolitan Council Bus Transit $55 million, Greater Minnesota Transit $7 million, and these are for 08. Local Road Program $10 million for 08, and Highway User Tax Distribution Fund $328 million for 08. And the final article authorizes junk highway bonding in the amount of $100 million a year for 10 years. So what we're looking at is, and I don't know if I have the final total of this, but it's somewhere around $2 billion a biennium, or $1 billion a year. I don't know if you got that fast on or not. I think you're good. I'm here. What other handouts have we got there? Ah, yes. One of these is a source of funding, which is a sales tax applied by peer cities and regions. And it indicates that many of the transit systems are moving to sales tax. It runs from 1% on up to, I think somebody was in here a little higher than that, 1.05 in San Francisco, plus state gas tax and parking tax. So a lot of the areas are moving toward local or regional transit sales taxes. There's another piece in there. It's the municipal state aid formula and how it would be apportioned to each of the cities that are indicated on the list. You all recognize that when you do a bonding project, trunk highways bonds, that the money does not flow to counties and cities. It goes to the trunk highway system because that's what the Constitution calls for. So we're leaving out in the governor's plan there's almost no money for the local units of government. That shows the municipal state aid money that would flow from this at both a 5 and a 10 cent increase in gas tax, because the gas tax is the key and the cab fees are the key to where the other units, local units of government, get their proportional share as indicated by the Constitution. Then there is also one for your county in there, CASA allocation of the motor fuel tax increase based on the new formula. And that also is broken down by 10 cent increase and 5 cent increase. It's only the new money that the CASA formula change would apply to. Anything else? Questions?
Apparently, Representative Earhart is complete with his testimony. Any questions or comments? Somebody's got to ask him a question. He's sure represent Magnus.
I don't know the answer to that.
I can't get on, let him get away without a couple of questions, Mr. Chairman. Article 8 on the sales tax increase. I've got a couple of questions. Is it my understanding that for the metro area there's not a referendum required, and in the rural areas there is? Is that
Representative Earhart?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Magnus, there is not a referendum. We're going to apply the same principle that you all applied to the Twin Stadium. Let the local people make the decision. But that is the county commissioners.
Okay, Magnus.
Okay, but I see in the subdivision 4 that the rural areas subject to approval by voters of the county in a general election. Is that a referendum?
That would, Mr. Chairman and Representative Magnus, that's to get even with you for all of you out there in Greater Minnesota voting as a tax in Hennepin County for the Twin Cities.
Well, can we vote on the tax you want to put on for your sales tax, Representative? Here on this one,
you are correct, Mr. Magnus, and Representative Leader. It does require a referendum.
And just want to be clear with you, Bill, Representative, and And Mr. Chairman, and I see another provision here in the rural areas that said the tax must terminate after the certain improvement they're looking at is accomplished. I don't see that in the metro area. Does the metro area tax just continue on?
And
this is my question.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Magnus, yes, we have an ongoing need for transit operations here, for one thing, and that's part of the reason for that. We also are saying that you can decide with all the counties along Highway 14 to finally get the thing done by all of you joining together in a joint powers agreement. And when you've raised the money and completed Highway 14, Representative Ruth can go home happy, and you can then it will be disbanded until you pick out another project.
One more question,
Mr. Magnus.
Chairman, and I understand then that the tax imposed on the metro area does cover operation of transit. Is that correct, Representative Earhart?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Did you, the individuals that are with you, were they your backup, Representative Earhart, or what's the...
I wasn't really talking. It was Steve Gordon. I was just fine.
I presume, as we take Representative Earhart, I presume they will be testifiers after we complete the, is that the deal?
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Just a question, Mr. Chairman. I didn't realize that we were supposed to get testifiers lined up today. Because I noticed the next bill has... I don't know if we'll get out of here by 8 o'clock.
Representative Earhart, those are testifiers for all the bills.
Oh, they
are. Having the way they're listed in the agenda.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
I think the next bill won't have any testifiers. You've taken care of it.
Representative Leader, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 946. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, House File 946 is probably pretty repetitive of everything you've heard, except we do have some minor variations. So in the essence of not repeating a lot of things, I'm going to go through the bill as I see it. Basically, what 946 does, it increases the gas tax, just as one of the previous testifiers did, 5 cents in 2008 and 5 cents in 2009, and it's indexed, and that's the indexing is what you spoke about before. It also increases the wheelage tax from present statute from $5 to $20. It also makes some adjustments in the motor vehicle license fees, and I think as we compare all three of them, they're fairly similar, but yet they're a little bit different. It depends on the amount of money raised. It does allow this 946 allows for an issuance of a half a cent sales tax, and that's again basically what the previous bill had, and it allows the one difference between this, I believe, and the other two bills. Is what they call the imposition of a local transportation impact fee. And that's the cities and counties for a number of years have been trying to get that impact fee. And an impact fee is something that they put on a property owner based on, in essence, on a number of vehicles traveling in a particular portion of the road right in front of their, wherever they live or if it's a business, and that's the way the city's supposedly would get some money back for reconstructing or maintenance of the road. And it's been an issue that's been before the committees in other sessions, but that happens to be in this particular bill. And I, members of the committee, I forgot to mention, basically this bill is a bill that's been basically drawn up by the Association of Minnesota Counties. One other thing it does, as in the previous bills, it does provide for additional bonding. It provides for the $2 million in bonds, as was pointed out by Representative Earhart, basically the same. There'd be $50 million for local bridges and $50 million for a local road improvements. And also the other $100 million would be split between $50 million for rural transportation projects or highway projects and $50 million for the metro area. So that was basically a balancing item. And it also provides the same change in the excess, we call them excess monies in the bill. That's the monies that would be raised by the new revenue, and that would be distributed to the counties under the a new county state aid formula, which was agreed by the Association of Minnesota Counties, and that was explained by Representative Earhart. It'd be 60% on needs and 40% in population. I believe that was correct. So that's basically the big difference, and I could go through the difference in the amount of monies that were raised well, actually, it would be the same amount of money as represented in a previous bill for the 5 and 10 cent gasoline tax. The motor vehicle, the wheelage tax would be the same. The vehicle registration in this bill would be amount to $104 million in 2008 and $106 million in 2009. And that, again, based on how you derive the formula for assessing the motor vehicle license tax. As you know, in the present statute, the formula is based on the, what we call the, is it ad valorem? But anyhow, it's based on the value of the vehicle. And that, and the value of the vehicle had a 1.25 factor applied to it. The difference between the bills that we have, between Representative Holberg's, Representative Earhart's, and this bill, basically adjusts what we call the number one base, if you want to call it that. After that, the percentages are the same as 1.25, so the variance comes in that amount. House file 946, in essence, increases each factor $25, as I remember. And again, this is we have the same sales tax bill in this as in the previous comments. The exception is, not quite, that's right. We have a half a cent sales tax, but it's pretty much along the same lines as far as the exception here. It's county board approval, if I remember. Right.
And it's all county.
And it's big part.
Any county or group.
Yeah, and this is statewide, and I guess that was yours is statewide. Any county can participate. It's optional. And again, I explained the bond authorizations and the bond monies, and the same for the local roads and the local bridges. So, Mr. Chair, I think that's pretty much the bill in summary. It's comparable to the other several bills, except it's a difference in the level of funding. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Well, Mr. Reeder, I think that impact fee, is that the same as that street utility fee that we had come up year or two ago? Representative Hornstein, I think, carried it.
That's the same one, apparently. We've had it every couple of years, and it just hasn't gone anywhere, right?
Mr. Chair, members, our impact fee is a little different than the street utility fee.
Okay.
Oh, if you said utility, yeah, this is different. This impact fee would be applied differently, was applied on the, actually in the bill, it's applied on the, when you get a permit, a building permit.
Yes. Okay. Questions? Representative Hosman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It sounds then as though there's sort of a potential built-in governance change in the metropolitan area because it requires counties to kind of buy into a joint powers board. So you've got a potential for a governance structure built by then.
Hendricks, yes.
Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, yes.
Other questions? Well, thank you so much.
Mr. Chair, stay in the chair. You stay in the chair.
We're done.
Oh, we have another.
Excuse me. Okay. John Haas Leiden, President of the Minnesota Trucking Association, is first on the list of testifiers. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is John Hausladen. I'm president of the Minnesota Trucking Association. We're a statewide organization with about 700 members that represent all types of motor carriers from across the state. And I think it's important to note from the beginning that while trucks represent only 4% of the registered vehicles, and they account for only 8% of the vehicle miles traveled in Minnesota, they contribute about one-third, or $393 million, of the state taxes and fees collected to support our transportation infrastructure. So clearly, the trucking industry contributes to making the system work. We are here today to support some specific provisions from all three bills, and likewise to oppose certain provisions in each. Our key message today is pretty simple. We believe that the current three-tiered transportation funding system of fuel taxes, registration fees, and vehicle sales tax works. We believe it works. We do not see the need to create elaborate alternative mechanisms, therefore. In this vein, we support the use of both trunk highway bonds and a one-time transfer from the general fund to address MnDOT's funding shortfall. And we also support dedicating the full 60% of the motor vehicle sales tax to roads and revising the vehicle registration fee. Generally, though, we oppose revenue tools that would be new and outside of that system, such as wheelage taxes or transportation impact fees. We believe that they create an uneven and sometimes and frequently an unfair playing field for both governments and industry. I think what makes trucking different is, of course, that we're mobile. We're small businesses on wheels. And often, our businesses can simply drive to other locations or other counties that are not assessing a wheelage or a transportation utility fee. Likewise, a new statewide fee could cause companies to base their trucks even in other states. The legislature itself recognized that wheelage taxes create additional administrative problems and exempted trucks from them in the 2005 transportation funding bill. We also very strongly oppose the use of mileage-based taxes as a substitute for fuel taxes. Now, our members travel across the whole U.S. Most of them pay taxes in every state, and they have witnessed the failure of mileage-based taxes. Seven states in the last 18 years have repealed them, and about 20 have actually looked at them and then rejected them as not being workable. In those states, those mileage-based taxes have failed because they are unfair, they're expensive to administer and comply with, they're open to wide tax evasion, and of course, they're not very acceptable to the public. And finally, the MTA does oppose the indexing of fuel taxes. Our members fundamentally believe that tax collection should not be put on autopilot. Such decisions should face public scrutiny, debate, and a vote by legislators who answer to those who elected them. And I did make a call to my counterpart in Wisconsin just before I came up here, and they did repeal their indexing. And it wasn't just a temporary set-aside, so it is repealed. In closing, let me remind the committee that trucking costs have increased dramatically in recent years, just like for those of you who drive cars, but even more. Diesel fuel prices have soared over 100% since the year 2002, and this is a new one. In just the last year alone, the cost of a new engine to meet new federal emissions requirements has increased $10,000 for one engine. Multiply that times a fleet. And this is on top of the nearly $15,000 that each and every Minnesota truck pays in combined federal and state taxes each year. So we thank you for the opportunity, and we're here today to ask you to fund our roads using the time-tested tools which work and exist nationwide. fuel tax, the registration fee, and the motor vehicle sales tax. Thank you for your time, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Leader has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hounslaughton.
Yes.
I'm sorry, but I think you haven't the slightest idea what the mileage tax is. I think you're talking about the truck vehicle weight tax, because there's no mileage tax in actually functioning anywhere. None have been repealed, and I think that's where we're running into problems. It's a straight user tax. It eliminates the gasoline tax, and I'd be happy to review it with you, because we have a whole stack in Oregon as a two projects, pilot projects, and it's just thinking you could look at it. I think you would appreciate it. The second comment, could you tell me when the last time your license plates have been raised, or when the last time they were even raised? I doubt if it's been 20 years. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Leader, weight and distance taxes have distance, which are mileage components, and weight components, so they actually do have both. But yes, they have a weight component as well. And I think one of the things that we have found in our experience is that taxes that start out simply being mileage-based do add a weight component to it, and that is certainly our unique concern there. Relative to the various taxes that we pay, of course, we pay more taxes as the cost of our vehicles have gone up, so the heavy vehicle use tax, the tire excise tax, the sales tax, so there are a variety, but yes, on the basic plates and the fuel, they have not gone up in, I can't say the exact year.
Other questions?
Mr. Nelson. Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Hounslaughton. The mileage tax question you said was there. What would be your alternative? They keep telling us that the fuel tax is going away, that, you know, as we cars get more efficient, it's going to be less a viable tax to raise. What would you believe is a good alternative to that so that we can continue to fund our roads?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Representative, of course, there's a trucking industry that pays a lot of taxes. I'm not sure that we would select any one tax and say, here, increase this on us. That's probably not prudent what my members would want. But what I can tell you is, in all honesty, if you were to lay that smorgasbord of all the options out there, wheelage taxes, indexing, utility impact, and fuel, and you said which one is the most acceptable to your industry, it would be the fuel tax. They believe that because, A, it's clear, it's transparent, it's a dollar amount that you can get your arms around, and in terms of how you translate that into your business model, you can do it clearly. So many of these alternatives that we're exploring have a lot of variability to them. They're very hard to calculate, how you build them into your cost structure, how do you communicate that to your customers. And so, again, if they were given all the options, they'd say the fuel tax is the most preferred option for funding.
Mr. Chair, I guess I don't think you understood my question. They're telling us that the fuel tax is going to go away because as the cars get more efficient and we move away from gasoline, that there won't be the fuel there to tax. So there'll be less of it there, so actually the revenue on it's going to go down. I guess some of the mileage tax, and there's been a lot of different alternatives that have said to go to. What would be your alternative, or what would be your suggestion that we go to, you know, as a way to get away from the fuel tax as its ability to fund our roads goes away and diminishes?
Right. Mr. Chairman, Representative, we're not advocating alternatives right now. We're saying let's use the systems we have, let's fund the system through those, and if there's more needed, let's have that debate and use those.
Would you mention to the governor next time you see him that you fully agree with the increase in the fuel tax? Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hounslaughton, I guess the question, as you recognize, you're changing your fuel type for trucks to some degree, but the automobiles are really changing. They aren't using gasoline or diesel. So when you're supposedly, if you're buying your diesel fuel, you're paying for those cars to drive where they aren't paying a fuel tax. You're providing that. Wouldn't that cause you a little problem when you see all the alternative type vehicles and hybrid vehicles we have now, that you'd say we're giving them a free ride and you're paying the tax based on the philosophy that I've been hearing from you?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Leader, as we all know, funding roads is a complex system, and we understand that it's a system. Our organization supported the transportation amendment this fall strongly, knowing that part of it was going to go to transit because that was needed. So I'm not sure I can comment directly on what you're saying about other cars. What I can tell you is that we're not advocating going away from the fuel tax for cars anytime soon either.
Representative Beard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Slodden, I'm thinking about your comments, and I'm somewhat sympathetic to them about going to a mileage-based system, especially if mileage and weight are going to be involved. But in thinking about the trucking industry, don't you already have a mileage and a weight component in your pricing now, particularly in your license fees, I believe? Or is it fuel tax? I used to own a truck, and one's a very sad chapter of my life. Don't ever do that, people. But I remember wrestling with the prorates and trying to allocate my fees among the several states and so on, and it involved the weight of my truck and how many miles I ran. And I remember it was incredibly complicated and led me to decide that I was never going to do this again. So I think you're already in some sort of weight and mileage system already, and I'm wondering why the trucking industry would be so resistant to dropping a fuel tax and going to a more simple, maybe transponder-based mileage system already. Wouldn't it simplify things enormously?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, I think you've just hit it on the head. Ours is an interstate business. Those programs, the International Fuel Tax Agreement, the International Registration Plan, are multi-entity organizations that have charters and rules and a board of governors and a very detailed system for what happens when I drive from here to California and I traverse all those states and what do I owe those states and what do they owe me. So there is a tracking, and that can be done simply with odometers, but that complexity, and so when you add wheelage taxes and things like that, they also impact those programs. So the technology is out there to do a variety of things, but of course the ability then to implement that, the cost to the governments to do that, our experience says it's very costly to put that in, and we'd be happy to provide you more detail on that. But yes, we're a very sophisticated industry with technology, but there's lots of problems it also creates.
Okay. More questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Leader.
Thank you. I understand, I think you recognize it too, but I think sometimes we hear the word with wheelage tax, and I think it's a tax on each wheel. That's not correct. It's on the vehicle. Right.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, Representative Leader, absolutely. And again, yep. Our point would be ours are mobile vehicles, and we may choose to, if Dakota County has a wheelage tax, and we have the option of putting it into Lakeville, or in Scott County, in another city, we may do that. So all of a sudden, you have a balkanization of how transportation funding is accomplished. And again, we think keeping the current three-tiered system transparent, consistent, is the way to go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And next, thank you for your testimony. Next would be Mayor Tom Coons, President of U.S. Highway 14 Partnership. Welcome to the committee.
Committee Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be able to testify this evening. I'm Mayor Tom Kuntz, Mayor of the City of Owatonna and also President of the Highway 14 Partnership. I'm here on behalf of 21 local government members, 55 affiliated members, and partnership to support the Earhart number 23 bill, House File number 23. And as mentioned earlier, both Connie and myself would be happy to take that message back to that partnership saying that Highway 14 is a goal and is going to be taken forward. The Highway 14 partnership supports gas tax increase, tab fee increase, and additional state funding to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. Examples of projects for Highway 14 that need funding is we have Highway 1441 interchange in North Mankato. We have North Mankato to New Ulm that has not been constructed yet. We have 14169 interchange. We have Trunk Highway 14 County Road 12 interchange. And we have the Owatonna to Dodge Center two-lane road that needs to be built to four-lane road. These projects total up about $60 million of dollars that are needed to complete the Highway 14 from New Ulm to Rochester. Good time to mention that, the governor last year announced that we would have $65 million to match the $65 million that's already in process for completion of the road from Waseca to Owatonna. We need to make sure that stays in place. We don't want to lose that. We look forward to the groundbreaking that will take place in July of 2008. Highway 14 has many funding needs that have a better chance of construction passage with the comprehensive plan. When we did the Janesville to Waseca area, that was down in three different projects. Thanks to the funding that was available through the bonding, we were able to put that in one project. I think we saved about $15 million over that time period by being able to combine them, all three of them, and do them at one time. So if we can do a comprehensive plan and get the whole thing done, that's going to be huge savings. Highway 14 is a issue that safety. From 2000 to 2005, 33 people died in 26 fatal crashes on Highway 14. From Highway 15 east of New Ulm to Highway 52 in Rochester, 75 were on two lanes, one-way roads. And if you looked at the state's fair survey that was done last year, it listed Highway 14 as one of the most dangerous roads in the state of Minnesota. Economic development plays a very, very important part in southern Minnesota. Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation did a survey and found out that about 70% of the future growth that will occur in southern Minnesota will be along Highway 14. So the economic development plays a very, very big part. Major regional centers such as Rochester, Owatonna, Waseca, North Mankato, Mankato and New Ulm all look forward to that completion of the four-lane highway. Major businesses such as the Walmart Distribution Center that located in Mankato look for the completion of the highway. We were fortunate enough to get Coca-Cola come to Owatonna. Coca-Cola took advantage of the Interstate 35 Highway 14 connection. So they're looking forward to that getting completed. And as we have ethanol plants and other things that are being built along Highway 14, it's just necessary that we get it done at one time. Finally, I'd like to make the comment that Highway 14 partnership supports a 35-5 split to Greater Minnesota Transit, and the 38-2 is not acceptable from the Highway 14 partnership. Highway 14 is a highway advocacy group. The group sees the benefits of maintaining and expanding rural transit for Greater Minnesota. We urge your committee to pass a comprehensive plan for this session. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the mayor?
Chair.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mayor, thank you for your testimony. And you know, Representative Ruth has been a real advocate here for the last 4 years that I've been on this committee. So you've got good representation for Highway 14. But you mentioned that, and we heard description of the Pawlenty-Molnau plan, and you mentioned that it only does this very small Waseca bypass. So it seems like this plan is really inadequate for, at least the governor's plan is really inadequate for what you want, which is all the way from New Ulm to Rochester. Could you comment on that a little bit?
And you're right. We would like to see it completed from New Ulm to Rochester. The section from Mankato to New Ulm has no funding whatsoever. The EIS study is being completed from Dodge Center to Owatonna now, and it looks to be completed in 2009 with no funding allocation. So, yes, we're looking for the highway to be done from New Ulm to Rochester, and however the funding becomes available is what we would support.
Thank you.
Other questions? Well, thank you very much, Mayor.
Thank you.
And next up will be Carol Lovell from the Myra Peterson from the Association of Minnesota Counties.
Yes, this is for Agnes.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Carol Lovell, and I'm the Transportation Policy Analyst for the Association of Minnesota Counties. And I have with me my Policy Chair, Myra Peterson, Commissioner of Washington County. I'm going to turn it over to her, and I'll be here to answer questions.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Myra Peterson,
really?
County Commissioner from Washington County, and I'm Chair of the Transportation Policy Committee for the Association of Minnesota County, as well as I'm Vice President of the Minnesota Intercounty Association. I would like to take this opportunity to thank the Chair and the members giving us this opportunity to discuss AMC's transportation plan. We would also like to thank Representative Leader and our co-authors for recognizing the need for a comprehensive approach in addressing Minnesota's long-term transportation funding needs. Today, you will be hearing a different approach to solving Minnesota's long-term transportation funding needs. We think that it's important that we not only have counties, but also the governor, mayors, and the state's leading business leaders, chambers, and longtime transportation advocates agreeing that something must be done to start addressing congestion, highway safety, and the ability of shippers and truckers to deliver their products and services on roads designed to carry the tonnage. AMC's proposal, House File 946, has not changed since it was introduced during the 2005 legislative session, and it is very similar to the Earhart Amendment that was passed by the legislature during that session, but was vetoed by Governor Plenty. The same proposal was ratified again this past December at the AMC annual meeting, and without one dissenting vote, all 87 counties. But here we are, 2 years later, and inflation has eroded our purchasing power, and the highway user tax distribution fund revenue streams are not providing the increased revenues. And even with the passage of MVEF, the constitutional amendment cannot make up the shortfall. Recently, one of our counties submitted to AMC some information that I think you will find interesting. The county opened open bids for a 7-mile construction project on March 1st. The contractors told the county engineer that they would be getting great prices for the work since there wasn't much work this year. The low bid was 44% higher. That is significant, and that's what all counties are facing. Unfortunately, transportation funding is not going up 44%. The county received less funding from the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund in 2007 than it did in 2006. And the same is true comparing 2006 to 2005. This is one of the reasons property taxes are having to shoulder more of the responsibility for funding of the county state aid highway system that in many cases carries more traffic than the state highway trunk system. Funding these major arterials on the back of property taxpayers is a very regressive form of taxation. We did share with you a property tax handout about counties. While there has been some significant investment made in transportation to the trunk highway system in the last few bienniums, local units of government have not witnessed any increased funding. The committee has heard much testimony over the years about the county system's unmet needs, now totaling well over $250 million annually. Just prior to and the maintenance that we have, if you factor in inflation, this is one of our main reasons counties felt it necessary to put their funding proposal back on the table this session to address local needs. We don't think anyone can dispute the facts. There is at least a $1.7 billion in unmet needs over the next 10 to 15 years, just as our trunk highway system alone. That is why the governor is proposing his transportation funding proposal. The problem is, his proposal does not address the state's trunk highway system, the local highway system, and does not include any significant proposal to address local government transportation funding needs. That is why counties feel that AMC's balanced approach at only $1 billion per year is the right beginning to start solving the transportation funding crisis that we are faced with. That is why one element of our funding package is a recommendation to increase transportation user fees, specifically the motor fuel tax, by 5 cents in 2007, 5 cents in 2008, and then indexed motor fuel in 2009. We listened to legislative concerns regarding indexing and are recommending the Wisconsin model, where the legislature may suspend indexing in any given year. This proposal only raises $330 million. The added cost to a driver that travels 20,000 miles per year and averages 20 miles to the gallon equates to $8 a month, or 27 cents a day. Would citizens pay 27 cents a day if they knew it would reduce congestion and improve road safety? We think so. It is all in how you ask the question. If you ask if they want to pay for tax increases no matter what tax, the usual answer is no. Along with the proposal to increase the user fee for motor fuel counties, counties are proposing a change in the county state aid highway formula for new fuel revenue only. And this was truly a consensus that all 87 counties agreed upon. The current county state aid formula distributes county state aid by formula based on 10% on equalization, 10% on motor vehicle registration, 30% on vehicle lane miles, and 50% on needs. The needs is defined as bringing a road up to state aid standards. From this new revenue raised from an increase in motor fuels, the proposal being recommended that the state aid be distributed based on 60% needs and 40% vehicle registration. This recommendation was a long, hard negotiated item back in 2005, and it was unanimously adopted by AMC's policy committee. And again this year, it was ratified and forwarded to the full membership at the AMC annual meeting, where it was again passed unanimously. Counties hope that the legislation will recognize how hard counties worked on funding recommendations and will respect and support its broad content of this overall funding package. The proposal also seeks authority for any county or group of counties by board resolution to increase sales tax up to 0.5%, which would be dedicated to transportation infrastructure, both highways and transit. Projects that need to be delivered but are too expensive to build within the current available revenue streams would be accelerated. By overwhelming ridership of the Hiawatha Light Rail transit system, citizens have demonstrated that they want different options. The same results are expected with North Star Commuter Rail when it becomes a reality. Whether it's light rail, busways, commuter rail, or highway safety, these projects could move forward. In the metro area alone, this increased sales tax would raise approximately $225 million. The proposed increase in motor fuel and sales tax coupled together would still only raise $555 million, a far cry from what is needed to address the unmet needs. For counties that need additional options, counties are proposing the authority for any county to be able to levy by resolution up to a $20 wheelage fee that would be collected at the same time people pay for their vehicle registration fee. This revenue would stay in that county that imposed the fee and would be deposited in the road and bridge fund. There is authorization language at the present time for metro counties to impose this fee. To date, three counties, including my own, Washington County, have opted to impose a $5 fee. This proposal also includes a change in the depreciation schedule for motor vehicle registration fees by $35 starting on the first renewal period. To help the growing areas of the state, the proposal recommends giving local units the authority by ordinance to impose impact fees to help cover the cost of transportation infrastructure. After the local units of government develop a safety and intersection development plan based on a trip generation. I believe that this has been done, something similar to this has been done in Lakeville and is being looked at in Cottage Grove. The local unit of government would also have to give notice to the permittee and the provider and provide opportunity for testimony at a public hearing. Counties recognize the importance of bonding for transportation infrastructure and want to take this opportunity to thank the House for recognizing the needs of local bridges. The local bridge program is out of funds again and desperately needs an additional $50 million in local bridge bonding to address the projects that didn't get funded last year. MnDOT's Office of State Aid seeking funds to for the 2000, I'm sorry. That didn't get funded last year through the bonding authorization and the new projects that have been submitted to MnDOT's Office of State Aid seeking funds for the 2007 construction season. Counties also appreciate and recognize the need for local road improvement program and are seeking an additional $50 million for that program. Counties also recognize the importance of trunk highway bonding and are recommending $100 million annually for 10 years, $50 million for the metro area, and $50 million for greater Minnesota. Trunk highways are the most critical component of the state highway infrastructure and are very important to every county. Most counties are disappointed in the recent announcements of deferrals and delays in many of the accelerated projects that were scheduled because of the lack of sufficient funding. Counties are also concerned about the amount of debt that would occur if the governor's transportation funding would be successful. Counties are also interested in seeing additional efficiencies to provide more funding for construction and reconstruction. One of the ways we've been working to provide efficiencies is by working with MnDOT on contracting on a county-by-county basis to help them deliver some of their projects. Other issues such as prevailing wage, environmental regulations, more design build, early right-of-way acquisition are ways to affect more efficiencies. The elements in our comprehensive approach will go a long way in meeting the needs of our state's transportation system. We urge you to support for a package that will result in long-term solutions that bring increased investments to all of the state's transportation systems and will provide more construction and reconstructions during the 2007 construction season, resulting in more jobs throughout the state. Thank you for your attention, and I would be happy to try and answer any questions you may have.
Questions? Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Pearson and Ms. Leverell. I have a few requests to a lot of order on the list of testimony here. Dan Larson, I'm going to call you first, and then Richard Thomas. So, Dan Larson, if you could all be as concise as possible. We have this room till 8 o'clock, but it'll be dark out by then. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Dan Larson. Today I'm representing the Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus, a caucus of 24 counties that operate as a caucus within the Association of Minnesota Counties with a rural perspective. So I want to pretty much echo the sentiments of Commissioner Peterson, Ms. Lovro, as to the overall context of speaking on Representative Leader's bill. Just wanted to echo the sentiments of the need for overall transportation funding. We all understand the needs, and our organization believes and supports the language and the sentiments contained in this bill. I want to focus on one particular program in that bill and talk about the significance of that to us. This is the roots of regional significance portion of the bill, and to lend our support to adequate funding of that program, which you may know it was initiated several years ago, funded at some levels in recent years, but we've started in working with state aid to define and quantify the need. And if I could, that's what my testimony is going to go towards. Now, so in 2006, the funding for Roots of Regional Significant Program breaks down as follows. 40 county projects totaling $22.5 million in demonstrated project needs were submitted to MnDOT state aid last year in 2006. And of that total funding for the account was $7.5 million, and that went to that broke out to three different local entities of local government: cities, small cities, and counties. Counties received $1.5 million to address demonstrated need for the program. So, through a competitive process that was already established by state aid, 35 worthy county projects that have demonstrated needs representing $21 million in unfunded needs last year can be established. So I want to make that point. We're coming at this from a little different perspective this year and looking at the number of unfunded needs. So that, from the county perspective, represents about $21 million in unfunded needs. So I really want, we're going to be talking to you more about this program, and hopefully we can fund it to an adequate level. These are not the large major projects that you typically think of perhaps in the metro area. These are small projects that could be the difference between an economic development project, a project being economically viable, and not getting done at all. And I'm talking specifically, say there's a need for a 10-ton road between the elevator and the railroad, and the local government just doesn't have the dollars to put this over the top. They would apply for funding from this program and compete. So just to give you an idea, it's been successful in several of the counties that have received funding, and we're going to be talking to you more about this as time goes on.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Questions? I'm going to call up Richard Thomas next, and then we'll move back to our regular schedule. And there is Ms. Vanover as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Margaret Donahoe. I'm the Legislative Director for the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. The Alliance is very pleased to be here today in support of House File 23. We believe it is the kind of long-range, comprehensive transportation funding package that we need to make the kind of investments that will make our roads more efficient, safer, and will allow for greater economic development. I'm going to turn this over now to Richard Thomas with Ames Construction, who is president of the Alliance this year, and just stand for any questions that you might have.
Thank you, members of the committee, and for the record, I'm Richard Thomas with Ames Construction. I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about the needs. I think that previous speakers have talked about that well, and frankly, you know, a lot of you folks have been around this issue for a while, or you ran on this issue. So I think the idea that we need to do something, I think, is obvious to most of you. As Margaret said earlier, I'm here to speak in favor of House File 23. And I think the main reason I support it is it's not over reliant on any funding source, and it's balanced in both in terms of the modes. You know, there's something for transit, there's something for local projects. There's you know, there's monies for our ports. You know, it really addresses the problems of a whole system. And also, it's balanced both in terms of the funding sources. We cannot solve the problems that, you know, the problems that we're in right now. It took us 20 years to get here. And we can't gas tax our way out. We can't bond our way out. We can't, you know, it's going to take a combination of different funding sources for us to move forward. There's also been a, you know, in the discussion of these different transportation funding proposals and what they'll cost us, unfortunately, there's been little discourse about the cost of not doing anything. And I also hope today that I can shed some light on that. Congestion and unsafe roads are taxing all of us. They tax our businesses, our health and environment, and our quality of life. Our unmet transportation needs are $1.5 billion a year, and that includes the new MVEST revenues that we got through our constitutional amendment. That number is going to grow by $150 million a year because inflation on construction projects has been between 10 and 11% over the last few years, and fortunately it's been primarily due to things that are out of our control. Primarily the cost of materials, because there is a building boom worldwide going on right now, and with the global economy that we have, unfortunately, great use of concrete in China also affects the price of concrete here in America. Inflation alone will eat up 5 cents of our gas tax this year. And even a 1 year of delay on major projects such as the crosstown will eat up a penny of our gas tax. Because of these rising costs and the lack of long-term funding, the list of unfunded projects in MnDOT's 20-year plan now total $21.5 billion. And for all of you that have gotten this, I believe all of you have gotten this, this book from the Alliance, we have a list of all those projects starting on page at the back book, starting after page 12. And I think, incidentally, too, for those of you who are looking at cost comparisons, the governor's plan, you can get these projects done. With our plan, the bill that Representative Earhart is carrying forth, you will get these same projects, plus you will get 9 pages of projects at the back of this book. And I really think these are the priority projects that we need to get done around the state. Failure to put a long-term funding plan in place is really taxing us. Congestion in the metro area costs commuters over $700 a year. And it costs $2 a minute to move goods around town. So you can see that any minute of delay is not only adding, you know, time and traffic that we take away from our daily lives, but it also adds cost to all the products that we depend upon, and I would call that our congestion tax. In fact, it's not uncommon anymore to have the cost of moving our products to be more than the cost of the product itself. Aggregate is, in particular, is one of them. And the cost in terms of human life due to unsafe roads and bridges, particularly in greater Minnesota, is one that I think all of us ought to find unacceptable. In short, our needs are obvious and ongoing, and further delay only decreases our levels of safety, our quality of life, and our economic competitiveness with other states in the union. The cost of nothing is particularly bad when one looks at terms of jobs and economic development. Using the Bush administration's numbers, we create 47,500 jobs for every $1 billion that we spend on transportation. And these are numbers that have pretty much tracked with the numbers that we've used over the last 10 or 20 years. So investing in transportation is not only does it solve a lot of the congestion and economic problems that we have, but it's also giving us money back. It's creating jobs. It's creating wealth that is in turn going to be more tax revenues. I just looked at the construction industry in particular. We employ over 46,000 men and women in Minnesota, and most of our businesses are family-owned like ours, and they're crucial to the local economies that they're in. These are not minimum wage jobs either. These are folks that are highly skilled and well-paid. In short, these are the kind of jobs one can raise a family on. And again, I'll refer back to this book if you get a chance to look at it. If you look at page 10 in this book, you'll see that MnDOT's construction budget will fall from $800 million to $483 million this summer, about a 40% decrease, despite the fact that we just passed the constitutional amendment. In terms of job losses, this could exceed 15,000. The blow could be softened somewhat by, you know, some of the stadium projects that are going on, but as for some of you that are familiar with the construction industry, the jobs on the building side and the transportation side are not necessarily transferable. It wasn't so long ago that we were faced with the closure of the Ford plant, which resulted in 4,000 lost jobs. Now, this was a big blow for Minnesota, and many of you tried to do what you could to save those jobs. Even the governor, to his credit, went to Detroit to meet with representatives from Ford in an attempt to save those jobs. If nothing happens between now and July, we're looking at almost the equivalent of Ford plants closing. And the good news is we don't have to go to Detroit to solve that problem. If we want to solve that problem, we can do it right here, and in fact the process would start right here in this room. And you know, I would urge the legislature and the governor to work in a bipartisan manner to pass a comprehensive long-term plan. I understand it probably won't be everything that's in this bill, but I think if you look at the three bills that you have here today, I think you have particularly in the first two, you have the elements of what you need to, the last two, you have the elements of what we need to do to move forward. In closing, we have the opportunity to save these jobs, and in fact, we have the opportunity to create a lot more jobs if we make the investments that we need to do in transportation. And as I had said earlier, according to the Bush administration, 47,500 jobs are created for every $1 billion spent in transportation. So while the situation is bleak now, it certainly is one that if we solve, can continue to pay the dividends for generations to come. And closing, I'd want to urge all of you to do the right thing and pass this bill. it won't be a vote you'll regret. In fact, I think if you explain to the voters, and I certainly I think if the constitutional amendment last fall was any indication, the public knows that we need to move forward, and I think they're perhaps maybe a little bit ahead of the curve. And I just want you to know there's a lot of Minnesota families that are counting on you to get something done. I think the idea of not getting a bill done of some sort this session ought to be a position that's untenable for all of us. I mean, there's just too many jobs at stake here. And anyway, I would just ask for your support of House File 23. Thank you.
Ms. Donahoe?
I'll just be here to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for Mr. Thomas, Mr. Donahoe? Ms. Donahoe? Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it. And Aaron Sexton from the Chamber of Commerce is next. Jason Foyes, Twin City West Chamber of Commerce.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Aaron Sexton. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and I realize it's getting late, so I've done a little editing. I'll try and keep it brief. The Minnesota Chamber appreciates the large number of funding options for transportation that have been put on the table in all three bills this afternoon. These bills have been helpful to fuel the transportation debate and the discussion on much-needed transportation funding. And I appreciate the opportunity to weigh in on what the Chamber supports today. The Minnesota Chamber, representing 2,400 businesses statewide, was very proud to be part of the effort to pass Minnesota's transportation amendment today to dedicate transportation dollars for transportation. We strongly support finishing the work on the transportation amendment by statutorily dedicating those dollars 60% for roads and 40% for transit. And we really do urge you to keep that commitment to Minnesotans. The chamber was a proponent of the transportation amendment because transportation is a growing issue for our membership. Our members are users of the system. They recognize that it's important for businesses to move freight and other goods efficiently and safely, and for employees to get to work in a timely and safe manner. Our members, and I would argue many Minnesotans based on what we learned from the transportation amendment, support a transportation package that is modest, common sense, and balanced. The Minnesota Chamber supports and urges you to consider a modest, common sense, and balanced funding package that includes statutory dedication of MBES 6040, a 5-cent gas tax, increased license tap fees, bonding to accelerate projects, and 100% dedication of the sales tax on leased vehicles and use that money to fund transit projects. We hope that you can put the days of all or nothing in the past and support a longer-term approach to increasing funding for transportation. I can tell you that our members are not ready or willing to support the large funding packages before you, and we think many Minnesotans share that feeling. We realize that this does not meet all the needs for roads or transit, but it is significant progress. It will demonstrate real progress to the public and increase the confidence that new state investments in transportation will improve their lives. We also recognize that passing a modest approach will not end the transportation funding debate, and we will all need to roll up our sleeves to garner support for additional funding going forward. I know that many people here want a major funding package in 2007, but the Minnesota Chamber believes that after 20 years without progress, it will be difficult to solve the problem in 1 year. When the proposal has been all or nothing, the solution has been nothing. When a modest, common sense, balanced approach was put in front of the voters last November, it worked, and we think it will work again. We know that some of the funding options that we put forward today are all contained in some way, shape, or form in the bills before you today. It just may be at different funding levels. But we would encourage you to take a look at pursuing a more modest approach as you put together your omnibus transportation financing bill. And I appreciate your time. Thank you, members.
Mr. Chair, members, good evening. My name is Jason Flores. I'm Director of Government Affairs for the Twin West Chamber of Commerce. Thank you for the opportunity to testify here this evening. The Twin West Chamber of Commerce is a regional business organization representing 1,000 member businesses in 10 cities in the western suburbs of Minneapolis. About one-third of our members are located outside of this 10-city area, so we truly have a regional focus, especially when it comes to transportation. I'm also here this evening representing the Metropolitan Coalition of Chambers, an association of 24 area chambers of commerce representing business in more than 60 communities in the metro area. MCC was formed 5 years ago as an advocate for significant investment and improvement in the Twin Cities transportation infrastructure. I want to first echo the points made by Ms. Sexton in support of the proposal put forward by the Minnesota Chamber. Twin West and MCC have each adopted very similar proposals. Passage of the Transportation Amendment was only the first step towards solving Minnesota's transportation challenges, and Twin West and MCC also support a balanced and moderate increase in ongoing transportation investment. There are currently a number of proposals, and we've heard several of them here tonight, to increase the sales tax in the 7-county metro area to fund transportation and transit projects. Although the need to fund transportation and transit projects remains great, Twin West and MCC have serious concerns with the utilization of a metro-wide sales tax for transportation and transit financing. First, many people fail to recognize that the sales tax is a significant business tax. According to the Minnesota Department of Revenue, businesses pay about 45% of the state's sales tax, which equates to more than $2 billion annually. In the long run, Twin West and MCC would like to see the sales tax base reformed to reduce the burden on Minnesota businesses by eliminating business inputs from the base. Tax policy experts agree that the sales tax base should not include these business inputs. By continuing to grow the sales tax in its current form, it will only be more difficult to reform the base as more and more constituencies rely on the sales tax as currently structured for their financing. According to a 2005 study by the Council on State Taxation, businesses in 28 states pay a smaller share of the sales tax burden than businesses in Minnesota, while 5 additional states do not have a sales tax at all. Minnesota is a high sales tax state and also has a high overall tax burden, ranking 10th in the nation in state and local tax burden according to the Minnesota Taxpayers Association, a better ranking than that is necessary to remain competitive nationally. Although businesses do look to our transportation infrastructure when determining where to locate, they will look harder at our tax structure. And while Phoenix, Denver, and San Diego are often cited for their impressive transportation investments utilizing a metro-wide sales tax, it's important to understand that these cities have the capacity to do so. Even now, after these additional taxes have gone into effect, these cities still have overall tax burdens much lower than we have here in Minnesota. And I do have a handout, copies of it tonight, unfortunately. I do have data to back up that assertion. In addition, according to the Business Barometer Survey of the statewide business community, as well as the Minnesota Chamber poll conducted in 2006, the majority of businesses do not support increasing the sales tax for transportation and transit funding. In addition, recent polling shows that the vast majority of Minnesotans feel that 16 cents out of every dollar they earned was more than enough to meet state needs, and that if the legislature spent the state's money more efficiently, they wouldn't need to consider these tax increases. The message from the public is clear. The legislature needs to reprioritize and spend smarter, not simply raise more revenue. In conclusion, Mr. Chair, the Twin West Chamber of Commerce and the Metropolitan Coalition of Chambers have serious concerns with the creation of a metro-wide sales tax for transportation, and instead would advocate for a continued scrutiny of the state budget and a reprioritization of the $35 billion of revenue the state already collects. Thank you for the opportunity to be here tonight. I'll be happy to stand for questions.
I might suggest that we figure out what general fund money and transportation highway easy tax fund money is. And you talk about $32 or $34 or $50 billion, it doesn't apply to roads. So I think you're mixing up the game here a little bit. And secondly, I've been on the tax committee for 13 years, and we always say that businesses don't pay taxes, people do. Representative Adore.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to ask the testifiers here. We hear a lot from you and your opinions about how we can solve our problems here, but what I hear is you keep talking about reprioritizing our funding here, our spending here at the legislature. Yet I hear very little coming from you what we should cut. Should we cut health and human services that go to support low-wage earners? Should we cut education so that you don't have employees who are ready to come into your jobs and do the work? Are we able to cut our environmental funding so that we don't have people that our counties are not able to support their parks, which is the number one reason that people live in some of our counties? I mean, what is your plan to offer us to go ahead and solve these problems? Because it's a little frustrating to be on our end and keep hearing about reprioritize the $35 billion, and yet you're not coming back with anything for us. So I'd like to hear what they would like to offer as a cut to the programs.
Representative, Ms. Sexton.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative, you know, I think
What I explained in my testimony did offer some solutions for our transportation. It doesn't get us the whole way, but we do support a 5-cent gas tax. We do support increasing the license tab fees. We do support some bonding to accelerate projects, and we do support 100% dedication of the motor vehicle sales tax on leased vehicles. We are not coming here empty-handed. We do recognize that there does need to be additional investment in transportation, and I think what we learned from the transportation amendment when we worked on that is we did a lot of polling, we did a lot of focus groups, we garnered a lot of information from the public, and transportation is one area where people do believe there does need to be additional investment. And it is, you know, the gas tax, license tax fees are transportation dollars that are constitutionally dedicated for transportation. So I do take a little offense in the sense that we are not, that we're coming here empty-handed. We do support additional investment.
Well, Mr. Chair, but again, we're looking at $1.7 billion. You're not coming to the table with anywhere near that. And then you're asking us again to reprioritize. What exactly do you think we should do? You've talked about minimal increases there. What we see and what many of the organizations that work with your agencies come to us with, again, is $1.7 billion. The bill that we are talking about here with the chair is the House File 23, only offers us a little over $1.5 billion. I mean, what are you expecting us to do? And you're coming to us with minimal revenue increases with a huge demand, and you're asking us to take it out of the general fund.
Well, let me ask, what are you proposing in the way of tap fees and bonding? I mean, you say 5 cents on the gas tax.
Mr. Chair, we have not laid out a specific number for bonding. I think that's the prerogative of the legislature to determine what we can fund as far as debt service and so on. As far as license tap fees, our policy does support up to $100 million a year in tap fee increases.
I don't want to be harsh, but last few years ago, you wanted us to put it on the ballot and not make a decision about the gas tax. Now you're telling us you don't want to offer anything, but you want us to make a decision. Which do you want?
Well, we do support a 5-cent gas tax, Mr. Chairman.
I know. I asked you about the other two.
And tap fees, our policy has been clear that we support up to $100 million in tap fees, and I think that's, you know, consistent with, you know, close to consistent with what Representative Leaders put on the table as far as the tap fee increase from the numbers. If I might just add one other comment, you know, I think that we are not out of step with what a lot of the public is viewing as far as transportation. And like I did say, we did a lot of work on the transportation amendment and learned a lot while we were doing that work. And you know, one of the things that we consistently tested was talking about the $1.7 billion need for transportation funding. And what we learned is we need to talk about what the new investment will do for our transportation infrastructure, not how far behind we are. And the harder we try to push this $1.7 billion number through Minnesotans Better Roads and Transit, the more pushback we really got that was not the way we should talk about it. And I think you'll notice in any message you saw in the transportation amendment, it was not about the $1.7 billion need. It was about how additional investment will help us move people faster and more efficiently. And I think it is. This is a problem that has taken us a long time to get into. It's been 20-plus years of inaction and long-term investment in transportation, and I think it is going to take us one more year, more than 1 year, to get out.
20 years.
And I think it's going to be difficult to solve it in 1 year, Mr. Chairman.
I know. I'm kidding you.
I just have one more, and then I know there are other questions. Again, part of that's the problem when you passed MVEST is that you passed it with the idea that it was going to solve some problems. I have had many voters come to me saying, we passed MVEST, we're supposed to be done worrying about transportation. So although we appreciate it passing, although it was a wonderful thing to be able to give us some additional revenue, at the end of the day, the voter still thinks that passing MVEST was all that they needed to do to solve our transportation problem. And when I go back out and I say to my voters, it's a $1.7 billion problem, and you're asking me to solve it with $147 million. I don't know anybody who can solve a problem that way. And I guess I'd like to again, put it back to you. Where do you expect us to get the money? And if it's general fund, what do you expect us to do to supplement the services that we're going to have to cut that make your employees better employees?
I'm sorry, and I know this isn't necessarily... I'm answering your question, Mr. Chairman, but I don't think it's... Like I said, I don't think it's fair to say we're going to solve this in 1 year. And I think it's unfortunate that voters viewed it that way, and I think we tried to be very clear in our messaging that this was one step for transportation funding, not the finish line. And we do support additional investment. We just don't think we can do it all. We don't think we can come up with $1.7 billion in 1 year, and I don't think anybody, even in the bills before you today, proposed that. And so I think it's unfair to maybe request of us where all that money is going to come from. There's no other proposal out there that's talking about $1.7 billion either. I think we are going to need to continue to roll up our sleeves and continue to figure out where we're going to get additional dollars. And we are a membership organization. My members do not support that to that extent of funding in 1 year. And we are going to have to continue to figure out where that money is going to come from and how we're going to make that additional investment. But we don't think we can do it all in 1 year.
Thank you. I believe you. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to echo Representative Medora's concerns about shifting more funds from the general fund away from education, away from developing an educated workforce for the businesses of our state, away from health care for people who are not able to receive health care at work because it is an increased business cost and businesses... Some businesses are not able to provide that for their employees. I'm very hesitant to propose shifting more ongoing funds away from the general fund to do that. And I do wish the chambers would step up and participate to a greater degree in solving a $1.7 billion problem. I agree, Mr. Chair, that I don't think there's a bill today that's going to put up $1.7 billion into this system. We're trying to make some incremental steps. I think that these are common sense and they are modest, and I think voters understand that. But I have a specific question dealing with the 5 cent gas tax you indicated you would support. We've heard testimony here today that a 5 cent gas tax increase would be eaten up by inflation almost in the first year, if not in the first year. And so my question is, where do we go from there? If 5 cents is going to cover the cost of inflation right out of the chute, how does that move forward? How does that help to solve the problem? Do you have an answer for that? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I am not suggesting, once again, that this is the entire solution and that we are going to fix our entire problem in 1 year. A 5 cent gas tax isn't the end of the discussion. This is what our members support at this point. It took us a long time to get to support a 5 cent gas tax increase, and that's been our position now for the last number of years, that we would support that increase in the gas tax. But I would also say to your earlier comments, on general fund dollars, what I'm talking about, a 5 cent gas tax, tap fees, statutory dedication of MVES, bonding, and 100% of the motor vehicle tax, sales tax, and lease vehicles is not general fund dollars. Those are new revenues. We are talking about new revenue for transportation. We are talking about additional investment. Is it to the level that maybe you would appreciate? Maybe not, but I think I also did acknowledge that we're going to continue needing to roll up our sleeves and figure out how we move forward with transportation funding in the future. This, once again, I don't think any of the proposals we're talking about are the end of the transportation funding debate.
Representative Morgan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand that the proposals you're making aren't transferring money from the general funds. You're admitting that your proposals are not enough. You're suggesting, and I'm agreeing with you, that... The proposals, the bills we've heard today, are not going to be enough to solve the problem. Mm-hmm. I think we're all talking about making incremental steps. But you're making just additional statements, and your counterpart there, who hasn't been given a chance to respond here, and maybe I would address this question to him. Your counterpart there specifically mentioned reprioritizing what we spend our money on. I assumed he was referring to general fund dollars. If I'm wrong, I would be happy to be corrected. If I'm not wrong, I would ask specifically, how are our priorities misplaced when we're spending about 45% of our money on K-12 education, another good chunk on healthcare and higher ed and early childhood education, and where would you suggest we go back and tell our voters we're not spending the money wisely enough here because we need to spend it on transportation when we have these other dedicated funds for transportation? That's what I was suggesting about the reprioritization. Not that you're suggesting we do specifically move general fund dollars away. Your counterpart made a specific recommendation on reprioritizing our spending. If I inferred incorrectly from that, I would like to have a chance to apologize, but if I didn't, I would like to give him a chance to clarify.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I did state that the state does need to continue to reprioritize within the $35 billion of general fund revenue, as well as within the additional revenue that's gained each year in the state through economic development, through business growth, and through an expansion of our economy. And that is one area where we would support money coming from, is from an expansion in the state budget growth and from the surplus as it is this year and into the future. We also do have proposals on the table, which we're not addressing here tonight, which address the rising cost of health care, things that can be done there, as well as continuing to reform our schools to pay for student achievement and keep our students competitive in a global economy. So by no means does transportation exist within a vacuum that we can simply advocate for money coming out of the general fund, going to transportation, being taken away from other areas, all of which are important to business. That is the role of the legislature, is to continually decide among those priorities as to which ones should be funded and at what level. I simply want to state that reprioritization needs to be done. It needs to be done every 2 years before any additional revenues are considered.
Representative Mason?
I would just like to make a comment or a quote that I heard recently. I was watching the governor of the state of Michigan give her state of the state, I'm sorry, and she kept talking about invest and invest and invest in the state, and then she said our neighbors, like Wisconsin, like Minnesota, have higher taxes, but they have lower unemployment. So again, I mean, we're at the stage now where we've been blessed with a lot of investment over the years. We know that it has been happening over the last few years, and yet my personal perception is you're kind of missing the boat about why we're slipping behind now. Mm-hmm. Am I right?
Mr. Chair, I think what we're all discussing here and maybe arguing over a little bit is what that level of investment should be. I don't think we are arguing about should there be continued investment in transportation. There should be, and we need to continue to move forward. But I think where our members are at, and for a variety of different reasons, I think they understand that continued investment in transportation will provide benefits. But it is in the mix of a lot of different issues that are out there right now, and we are not a low-tax state. We do have issues that we do need to worry about as far as remaining competitive in a competitive place that businesses want to continue to grow or locate. And I think we need to consider that entire mix as we're looking at things and how we choose to invest new dollars and new revenues.
Thank you.
Representative Sanderson, we got keep moving here, folks. So,
okay.
Ask me a yes or no question.
Thank you.
Actually, I was going to go on a diatribe, but I won't. This is some good discussion, and we've got the freshmen weighing in here in a heavy way. And having been here for 4 years and watched the transportation bill kicked around like a soccer ball, it tends to be a little bit of a misnomer to say that, we're addressing the issue, and it's very complex, and I appreciate the chamber stepping up to the plate here. One of the things, just number one, on MVEST was about honesty to voters. upfront MVIST was about those dollars going to where we said they were going to go when this whole MVIST was put into place. So that's where we plugged the first hole. The next is, do we create a vision as legislators for an infrastructure that creates economic development? And I think that's what the chamber is getting at here. It's about jobs. It's about infrastructure that sustains a healthy economic development. And, you know, part of this process for us is developing priorities. And the state of Minnesota, you know, basically responsible for developing that infrastructure, and we have in our Constitution that we're required to provide an education for our students. But it doesn't say that we're required to provide the health care. In fact, in Minnesota, we were number one in terms of the lowest number of uninsured members in the state. So we are making huge advances here. And for us to begin to sway this thing and say, you know what, we're falling behind in transportation, I agree. 20 years, we have really not done anything. And it's about time to step up to the plate. But I think there's a balance between the chamber and what we want to do with this $2.7 billion budget surplus that we had from the last year. You know, so where are we going to bring in that balance in terms of, number one, for us, painting a vision? The legislature has to paint a vision, and transit is part of that, and funding roads is part of that vision. And I think if we can come together with a good package, the people will jump in behind. They'll be willing to do some of the stuff we're talking about. But if we don't, if we just kind of say we can't do it, we're toast. So that was a short answer. Yes, sir.
Representative Beard.
Well, I was going to kind of tee off on the same kind of thing, Mr. Chairman, because after you've been around this game for 20-some years, you hear the same story over and over and over again. There's always the unmet need, and what I'm just going to tell you, when you hear the words fully fund, hold on to your wallet, because nobody really knows what that means except it's a really big number. And it's very useful for lobbyists, actually, because when it's never fully funded, they always have a reason to come back and beat us about the head and shoulders and demand more of our money, or money from our constituents. And in this case, we've heard from several people who actually have a dog in the fight. More money is good for them, whether it's transit advocates or whether it's highway builders. And that's not a bad thing. But recognize that it is a real thing. People who have a dog in the fight would like us to spend more money doing these things. Well, that's fine, but just recognize it for what it is. And recognize that if there is an alleged unmet need of how many billion dollars? Well, if you added up all the things I'd like to do before I retire, I got a pretty big unmet need too. And if I did it all in the next year or two or three, I'd break the bank. I can't do it. I've got to be a responsible adult, and I've got to kind of bite it off in chunks that we can handle without flattening my bank account or driving my wife absolutely crazy. We're the same way here. Folks, there is no magic bullet. There's just a whole box of little lead bullets, and every year we need to shoot a couple more of them. And we pick off projects that make sense, prioritizing, as the gentleman spoke about. And I think that's a good thing. It's a good thing to have this kind of intense discussion around here. And realize, I want you guys to realize, and please be fair in the debate, when we're talking about roads and bridges, and yes, transit, we're not beating up on school kids or starving grandmas in nursing homes. Not at all. Please don't bring that into this debate, because that unnecessarily churns the water and kind of gums things up. We're talking about roads and bridges and transport, transit here pretty much, and largely, folks, it's funded with user fees. And this is what we're talking about. How many user fees can we lay on our economy before we start having the law of inverse returns? That's kind of the balancing act we're about here. Again, just in conclusion, Mr. Chairman, there is no magic bullet. And if we bite off this silliness of, here's the huge unmet need and we've got to do something now, darn it, we're being derelict in our duty, well, that's just silly. It doesn't work from a financial perspective. And we've got to realize we've got to measure this out and bite it off in chunks that we can handle, our taxpayers can handle, and frankly, the contracting community in MnDOT can handle. I bet you if we brought contractors back up here and asked them if they could spend $2 billion in 1 year, they'd tell us no, they couldn't. It takes 24 to 36 months just to get the design done. And then you got to go out and acquire right away and all these other things that have to happen before we can ramp up to this. This isn't a magic bullet, and yes, it makes great politics and great theater to sit here and beat up on people who actually produce the wealth that we tax. Thank you very much for doing that, by the way. But we got to be responsible about this. So I'm going to ask us just to step back, switch to decaf, bring the volume down just a little bit, and let's hear from folks that actually are going to pay for this and kind of make it work without breaking the bank. I guess I don't have a yes or no question. I guess I just need to stop my chat.
I think you're right.
Thank you.
Representative Moore.
Great. I'll follow up very quickly. I hope this isn't too caffeinated, Representative Beard, but I am concerned. I do actually share some of your views on fully funding and those concerns. At the same time, I'm looking at counties that have absolutely no transit, not even fully funded transit, but zero transit. In those same counties, I've got folks who are dying on Highway 14, head-on collision again 3 weeks ago. So I know those are sob stories, but at the same time, they are very real needs that, even under the government's projections, we're looking at addressing 20 years from now. And on the transit side, we're actually falling behind. We're going from 60% of need being met to 50% of need being met under the MVEST dedication. So we're actually falling backwards. So I agree with you, we can't find a magic bullet. But I would say to testifiers, be very careful. Because at least when I go back to my voters, who are also paying taxes, they want to know, when am I going to be able to drive down this road safely? When is Grandma going to be able to get to the doctor on transit? This is modest, may be a long time coming, especially in greater Minnesota.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to just shift a little bit to the very specific tax that the Chamber has opposed. And I have to say, I agree with that. And that is, you know, the roads and bridges, that is another issue. But where it does affect the general fund is the transit funding. And the Chamber has been, and I think both of you testified, has been opposed to the half-cent sales tax. I wish we didn't have to do it either. I would have to be dragged kicking and screaming. I would rather not have to impose another tax on my taxpayers to fund transit. But that is where your challenge to us is relevant, because were we to not pass that sales tax, as you advise, and depend on the general fund for transit, then either we have to look for new revenue in the general fund, or we do have to, then it does challenge education and nursing homes and so forth. So it is, I believe, underlying here the opposition to the sales tax that is problematic, because there we don't have an answer. What do we do then about the impact on the general fund?
Mr. Chair, I would briefly state that one of the things, and we recognize that transit does need to be addressed, and to be honest, when we polled our member, 73% support more investment in roads and transit. It needs to be both. And one of the things that we have looked at, and you're right, we have opposed the sales tax for a lot of the reasons that Mr. Flores went through, but one of the things we've looked at is, do we look at 100% dedication of the MVEST unleased vehicles? Is that going to get transit 100% of the needs there? No, but you know, we're also not getting 100% of where the roads need to be right now. But it is significant that $67 million, if you phase it in the same way MVEST is phased in, and if you bring it all in right away, it's about, I think, close to $50 million. That's a significant step in the right direction for transit to keep projects like the Central Corridor and other lines moving forward and to bring some of those federal matching funds down. So I think, once again, it's probably not the end of the story, but it's definitely a step in the right direction and it's progress.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Hausman and I are kind of tracking together as usual here, because I had a question also about the sales tax. Similar, but I think a little bit different. You know, we had a handout about the different cities, our peer cities, our competitors for jobs and economic development and business activities. And they, you know, here are the cities that have a sales tax: Atlanta, Boston, Cleveland, Dallas, Denver, Houston, Phoenix, St. Louis, San Diego, San Francisco, San Jose, Seattle. And in many of these cases, some of them, I know certainly in Phoenix and possibly in Denver, they had referenda to get these sales taxes for transit through, and the business community supported them the way that you supported the MVEST dedication. What is it about the business community in Minnesota that
you know, consistently opposes this, vociferously opposes this, almost like an article of faith. What's different about our business community vis-a-vis some of these other business communities and chambers that have supported a dedicated sales tax for transit?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know all the differences, and I should contact some of my counterparts out there, but, you know, we have looked at the overall tax burden in some of these communities, and it's very different than what our tax burden is here, one. I think, too, some of what we've heard is that they've laid out a very clear vision of what that transportation system is going to look like, what's going to be done, how much it's going to cost, and how we're going to pay for it. And I think we haven't fully realized that vision here. I know there is a Transit 2020 plan, but even some of the components there keep shifting, and whether it's, you know, changing something from a Tier 2 to a Tier 1, or now we're looking at light rail on 35W and light rail on 394, and our vision does kind of keep shifting, and I think, you know, we spent a fair amount of money to get $300 million through MVEST, and we're looking at raising $250 million out of a sales tax that businesses pay almost 50% of, and I think we do need to do maybe a little better job making the case, and I think that's incumbent upon transit advocates and those of us who work in the business community to start to talk about the transit needs. Also, but I, are our members going to get there someday? Maybe. Are they there today on a metro-wide sales tax? No.
It's fine. We can move on.
I think we're almost done. Except I have one question. I remember that the chamber has often faded away when the governor comes on strong about something, and they tend up standing behind him rather than opposing him, whatever the question might be. I can remember David Olson sitting in the funding committee a number of years ago, and I asked him why that he was going with the tab fee increase, I think it was. And he said, because that's what, after repeatedly asked him, he said, well, because I think the governor will sign that. So what is going to happen when the governor says, I'm not going to sign a gas tax increase, and you guys are supporting it? Are you still going to be supporting it? You don't have to answer that. Just go home and ask your members. Unless you got something else to say, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Representative Earhart, and members of the committee.
Thank you.
Okay, we got a couple more folks here, and time is winding down. Leslie Davis from Earth Protector is next. Leslie, I very much appreciate it if you keep things short as possible. You carried up that whole burden of papers there, and I was afraid that you're going to unleash a torrent on us here.
Well, you're going to be happy that I showed up because I brought the solution to the problem. But, you know, when you talk about taxes and things like that, you know, there's a little poem that said, taxes land and taxes wage and tax the bed in which he lays. Taxes tractor, taxes mule, and teaching taxes is the rule. Tax him good and let him know that taxes is the way to go. And when he's gone, we won't relax. We'll come after the inheritance tax. But we can't keep taxing the people. And we can't keep adding up the debt. I got these books from the state auditor. And we're full of debt all over the place. School districts and townships and the specialist districts and city finances. We're out of money. We're broke. We're billions and billions of dollars in debt. I don't know how we're going to crawl out of that. And, you know, I wish I could stay home and not worry about the signs on the rivers that say don't eat the fish and don't drink the water and don't swim in the river, or where they're taking the money from the people to build a ballpark on a postage stamp for a billionaire, or watch the deteriorating roads and bridges and let them cutting down trees in the Superior National Forest for $32.50 for 110-year-old white pine tree. And asthma at epidemic proportions, pensions going bankrupt, absorbing the errors of the city of Minneapolis. I wish I could just stay home and not care about that stuff and come down here on my own dime. Nobody pays me to come here, but I brought you the solution. And that's House file that hasn't been heard yet, but it's going to be heard because it has sponsors in the House and sponsors in the Senate. That's going to require and allow you to require state-chartered banks to create, without reserves, money to pay for our roads and bridges and transportation system and the maintenance thereof. Fully paid for. and then we'll be able to eliminate the gasoline tax and not increase it. We'll be able to reduce the registration fees and change that constitutional amendment that took money out of the general fund and bring all that money back into the general fund so everybody can fully fund their favorite projects. And I don't know why this thing hasn't sped along and people take a look at it. My God, that's great. We'll have smoother, safer, state-of-the-art roads and mass transit all you want. And and tourism will increase, and we'll be able to collect the runoff from the roads that are going into the wetlands and stop all that salt from dripping off the bridges into our waters. You know, at one end, we're dumping the pollution into the river, and then we want to get money to catch it down at the other end. Well, I don't know, some clever folks might be doing all that catching. So I'd like to, before you vote on anything to do with transportation or taxes, and you're doing a good job with what you have to work with. You're not magicians. You can't make money out of thin air. You're not a banker. Bankers do that. That's their job. They create money out of thin air by making electronic entries in a computer. And they can lend out money that doesn't exist, that they don't even have. How to be said, well, I know how money is created and comes into circulation. I said, how? Besides the tooth fairy and the black helicopters that drop it all over. He said, well, the banks only lend out the depositors' money. And we know that's a lie. People said, well, they can lend out 9 or 10 times the depositors' money. I said, how can they do that? Oh. Lend out what they don't have. They've got the magic wand, so they can do that. Well, we can't borrow money from the banks because we can't afford to pay the interest. Interest is inflation. Inflation is not too much money chasing too few goods. Inflation is interest, because you don't see too much money. You see all the goods is yelling. Best Buy is yelling, Target, Walmart, everybody yelling, buy me, shop me, take me. So we know that inflation, that's a lie. That the economists have been taught and brainwashed through the whole educational process of how money is created. So what I'd like you to do is, before you vote on anything, carefully examine House File 619, Senate File 500. Representative Koonin has sponsored it in the House. He's the chief author, Representative and Senator Tomassoni, and we're working vigorously on Senator Murphy to have hearings. We can have the greatest transportation system in America, in the world, if you go along with this and take a look at this opportunity. So thank you for your time. I know it's late. I appreciate listening to me. But give this House File 619 a chance before you go forward. And that's the solution to our problems. It works. Everybody who spoke to the Federal Reserve says it could work. The FDIC, Federal Deposit Insurance Company, says it could work. So give it a chance and work with us. Mr. Byron Dale, who invented this thing, I'm not the creator of this stuff, he's willing to come and talk to you, and he'll come day and night and weekends and holidays and help you understand how money is created and we can do this together. Thank you.
Thank you. No questions, I assume.
No.
We're all in the room. Questions, I assume.
No.
We're all in the room. Tom Breza, council member from the city of Winona.
The nicest city in Minnesota. Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Thomas Breza. Some people may know me as Tim Breza. My constituents know me that way. I am a councilperson from Winona, and I'm here tonight to speak on behalf of the city, 70 cities of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. I would like to focus my comments very narrowly for you tonight. I know the hour is getting late, just on the transit portion of the MVEST. I do support, and our members support, File 23, and in doing that, I would like to do a couple of things for the committee members tonight. I would like to talk about transit awareness for Greater Minnesota cities and also their particular needs. Their needs are far different than what you find in the metro area. And if I could, I would just like to highlight a few of those. Our needs are very basic. When we talk about our needs for our citizens, we talk about getting the poor to work. We talk about handicapped people going across our city. Winona is a
a very small city, 25,000 people, but it's 5 miles long. And we also service our sister city of Goodview. It makes it over 7 miles long, very narrow. But to get people from one end to the other that are spread out through the city, it takes a transit system that works. We need a transit system and aid for that to get our elderly to the hospital, to church on time on Sundays. We don't have a transit system that operates 7 days a week. We have one that operates 5 days a week. And in those 5 days, it's basically during work hours. And then those particular transit riders do not have an opportunity to go back and utilize the system because we don't have the resources to go back and create an expanded system that's going to come close to meeting their needs. An additional, let me just jump right into what's happening in our state. You know, we're growing older, more diverse. Energy is this huge issue out there. Mass transit can solve some of those energy needs. When we talk about diversity, people in the city of Winona, we have college students. We have two universities and one college. Those kids use our transit system. They use it every day, and they're getting used to it. If we can go back and continue to have them adopt that usage in the future, we all save from that. Talking about getting older, and it seems like we're all doing that, older people, as you well know, have a propensity as they grow older to become less reliant on the automobile. And in doing that, they look for alternate means of transportation. Transit systems help solve that, and in going on into the future, that will become a bigger component. You know, the governor has a bill out there that dedicates the MVEST, the transit portion of the MVEST at 38% for Metro and 2% for Greater Minnesota. And I'll be very honest with you, for Greater Minnesota, that doesn't work. We need more funds than that. When that proposal, and you've seen that, talks about a validated need in Greater Minnesota for transit in the 2020 plan of 9% of those MVEST dollars. And 2% doesn't do it. And Senator Earhart, or Senator, promotion? Representative, and pardon me for that. The needs at 5% in your particular bill will not meet all of those too. But I've heard a lot of contention tonight. And that is a compromise that just may well work. Certainly, we need a fair distribution. The 2% for Greater Minnesota cities, all 70 of them that I'm here speaking to tonight, does not do that. 5% goes a long ways. Obviously, we would like 9%. But I work with budgets just like you do, and I struggle with them, and I have the very same constituents that you have, different districts, but I have the same problems that you do. And I realize how we have to come together to solve these problems, but I would certainly ask you to support File 23, and because of the lateness of the hour, I'll stand for questions.
Are there any questions?
No, I don't have a question, but I'd like to thank the councilperson. I didn't realize you came from a distance,
yeah.
And I hope you enjoyed this as you do your council meetings.
Well, last night was a great night. We celebrated our 150th birthday for signing our city charter, and I wish I could have brought some of the cookies or cake up for you to enjoy.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Just one tiny
question. Representative
Hausen. Thank you. I just wanted to clarify, sometimes percentages don't mean much to us, but what I seem to recall from a visit from the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, though, the dollar amount that you need to fill the hole and unmet needs and so forth was $83 million of new money. Does that sound... I see someone coming. It's helpful, I think, for us once we get down the road in writing to get in our minds what the dollar amount is. Now, it seems to me what I remember on that sheet was $83
million. My name is Steve Peterson with Flaherty and Hood. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, the $83 million was the MBES shortfall, the current unfunded request when Greater Minnesota Transit Organizations kind of set up their thing through MnDOT, they apply, and MnDOT says, we don't have enough money, but this is, so they cut their request down. And the unmet need that they could do kind of tomorrow, what, because when they apply for these, they say, well, we could run a Saturday service, it would cost us this amount of dollars. That's the $83 million. To do the full 9% to meet the goal of 80% of need by 2010, that's $183 million. Just so, that's what we're looking at. Yeah, I can certainly get that for you.
Any other questions? Is there anybody else in the audience that would like to testify? I see... I see Mr. Kane up there, and I think I see Pat McCormick and Craig Stone. Do you have anything to say? Are we done? That's when you're going to mark the bill up.
Oh, we're going to try it, but we don't have the target, so we won't be voting on it.
Representative Leader has an announcement. I'm not sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We were anticipating we'd mark a bill up on Friday. We're going to try to, but I'm sure we won't. We don't have our target 100%, so we'll be working on it, but I don't think we'll have a committee meeting, Representative Earhart.
Okay, we're done.